T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And it's coming to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans Studios. Home is so much more than a house. It's the home of your dreams. And for 30 years, they've been making it better. Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage. Will you push button? Purchase. Fight tonight. 855-212-4227. It is the biggest heavyweight fight that I can remember in a long time. I mean, I think it's big because if Wilder is able to beat Fury in the way he has beaten his other recent opponents, that will send him to a different level, because he's fighting somebody now who is not a bum, who is not, you know, a tomato can. He's fighting somebody now who is on his level, or considered a great fighter, or at least a very good fighter, and that people know. So I think that this will be, especially considering the way the last one went, where it was a draw. Fury knocked Wilder down. I think he kind of knocked him out, but the count was slow. Fury bounced, or Wilder knocked Fury down and nearly out. And then Fury bounced back and fought very well in the fight. It was very adept at dodging punches, and some people thought he should have won on the cards. So this is a big fight, and I want to know how into it you are. 855-212-4227, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line, sponsored by Geico. Whether you own or rent, Geico makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work, so get a quote at geico.com. Easy. 855-212-4227. Let's go to Brady in Windsor, Ontario. Brady, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Yeah, good morning, Robin. A great show as always. And first of all, happy 70th birthday, Dr. J. But yeah, I'll be rooting for Deontay Wilder because he's from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, my grandmother's hometown. And he's also got the sort of power George Foreman had back when I was a young man, where one punch could end a fight. And he's got enough charisma that could conceivably make him a star. And with like maybe a few exceptions, like Sugar Ray Leonard, or you mentioned Floyd Mayweather, boxing only goes as the heavyweight division goes. But the only trouble with a lot of these heavyweights these days is that a lot of them come from Eastern Europe and places other than the U.S., and people, you know, can't relate to them as much as they could, like Foreman and Norton and, of course, Ali and some of these other great heavyweights. Plus, they're all on pay-per-view or cable, and you don't see them on free TV the way you did when I was growing up in the 60s and was a young man in 70s and 80s. You saw them all the time. And, you know, even though there are a lot of, as I said, great smaller weight fighters, it's always been the heavyweight division that's carried boxing. So hopefully Wilder can knock out Fury tonight and become boxing's new it boy. And thanks for putting me on, Robin.
No, you got it. And I think it would go, you know, like he's already like made an impact to that people know who he is. And people have already seen the knockouts. And then he's got the whole package. I'm not a fan of the he wants to catch a body line. I mean, that's too far. And it's also, you know, it's a reminder, it's a guilty conscious thing, because boxing is the most dangerous sport, period. There's not a sport more dangerous than boxing. Football is very dangerous. We talk about it a lot. Head trauma, repeated head trauma. You know, I hate the idea that Concussion was the name of that movie, because it was a bad name for it. It makes people think it's all about concussions when it's really not. It's all about, you know, the concussion itself is a traumatic brain injury, but it's the repeated trauma to the head. But football's got nothing on boxing. You know, mixed martial arts don't really have anything on boxing either. Mixed martial arts, you're generally taking one concussive blow. You're not taking repeated blows. It's the one that's putting you out. It's not like bop, 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 bop. You know, what was punch drunk? You know, the term punch drunk, it's basically CTE before we knew what CTE was, right? We see deaths in the ring. We've seen multiple deaths this year in the ring. So I'm not a fan of Wilder saying he wants to catch a body on his record. But other than that, he's got like this presence about him. He's intimidating, which goes along with what he does out in the ring. And his right hand is the most powerful punch I've seen in the sport. Tyson Fury is a good character, and he's a skilled boxer. So if he wins, it's not going to be terrible. It'll set up a third match, most likely. But I think Wilder winning could be the real like launching point to him taking his career to another level. Let's go to Jesse in Dallas. Jesse, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
How you doing, Robin? Good to be on the show, man.
Good to talk to you.
I just want to say, man, boxing is, it's not like the 90s, bro. Everybody wants to see the fights that everybody wants to see, they can't see. Because, like you said, the promoter's trying to get the pocket, get the money. And, like, everybody wants to see Joshua and Wilder fight. When is that fight going to fight? Probably another year or two. I don't know. I'm just saying, Mike Tyson, if you see his record, he fought four or five people in 1 year. I mean, I just don't know how boxing is supposed to be so great now when you can't even see the fight that you really want to see.
Well, no, they need a federation, right? An association, whatever you want to call it. The Boxing Association of America, the World Boxing Association, the World Boxing Federation, whatever you want to call it. They need that in order to make sure that they're serving the fans as best as possible. I mean, I think if Wilder wins the fight, clearly Joshua would be the next logical opponent. Joshua, though, like, I don't know. I mean, he looks great. Looks like a model, right? But he lost to Andy Ruiz, who couldn't get prepared for the next fight because he was too fat. I mean, so I don't know if I see him as even a superior opponent to Tyson Fury, obviously. 855-212-4227. Are you into this fight tonight? Wilder versus Fury. Big heavyweight bout. How about Vinny in Arizona? Vinny, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, thank you, Mr. Lumber, for taking my call. Appreciate it.
You got it.
So, excuse me if I misunderstood what you meant by when you mentioned Deontay Wilder crossing over. Do you think if he went to some kind of UFC or Bellator that he would be successful just being a knockout artist, or do you think people with grappling experience and what have you would definitely have the upper hand on it?
I mean,
the gloves are lighter. I mean, his punches are going to come that much faster.
Yeah.
With that much more power. So,
I mean, he's also a big guy, right? I mean, this is always a tough question because the guys in mixed martial arts know they have background in various combat styles, including wrestling or Brazilian jiu-jitsu and the like, versus a boxer is a striker. So can somebody, you know, if the boxer gets taken to the ground, they're going to lose. But if the boxer can stand upright and throw those punches, they're going to win, right? So I don't know the answer. It depends on who the fighter on the other side is. But in Wilder's case, it's a different scenario, too, because he's so big. He's like 200-something pounds. So, you know, it's hard. There's not that many, you know, heavyweights in the UFC on that side of things who I think would give him who are accomplished enough where I could just sit here and say for sure that they would take him down. But that's what people always want to see, but you're never really going to see it because the boxer is going to want it to be a boxing match and the UFC fighter is going to want it to be a mixed martial arts contest. So it's really, you know, difficult to say that how it would play out because we haven't seen a real-time example of it. And I think it depends on the fighters, and it depends on, you know, what they specialize in. But, you know, there's some really good heavyweights at the UFC level, like Miocic and Cormier and Ngannou and guys like that, right? But Wilder's punch is scary. I mean, he only has to land that thing once. And that's what you have to... I mean, I do think there's a legitimate aspect of fear in fighting him. And he plays that up in the way he promotes himself. He plays up that idea that he's fearsome and he's somebody you should be worried about because he could hurt you and even kill you. Which, again, I don't love, but it's the truth. I mean, that's just the truth of the matter. You catch a punch from him, you never, all bets are off. What could happen? Because he comes in with that thing hard. And that's why he's won so many fights the way he's won them. I mean, you know, he's got 41 wins by KO. I think he has 42 wins overall, 41 of them are by KO. He's got 43 total fights. One of them is a draw that he almost won by KO. Like, I mean, he came a second away from, a split second away from winning that fight by KO. That was the first Wilder, I mean, the first Fury fight. So, essentially, every time this guy's ever stepped into the ring, he's knocked out the person on the other side of him. So that's a scary thing.
How about Fury for this fight saying that he stopped drinking? He used to drink between 20 and 30 Diet Cokes a day.
That's a lot of Diet Cokes.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, even...
That sounds like something that might happen in a studio next to me.
No matter what I love, I can never think about consuming that much of it in one day. Assume they're all like 12-ounce cans. I mean, we're looking at 3 gallons of soda a day. I mean, that's ridiculous.
Did he have a drug problem in the past? I mean, like, I'm serious. He did, right? So I
use that as a way to
Yeah,
compensate.
That's the one thing I would, like, if he was in a normal situation, that's like crazy talk, but I could sort of understand if you're used to an addictive thing and you're, yeah, Diet Coke is not good to consume a copious amount of Diet Coke like that, but it's better than some other things. And I think that's probably what happened. He replaced something else that he was putting into his body with the Diet Coke. But, you know, Diet Coke, regular Coke, none of that stuff's going to help you against Deontay Wilder. You gotta stay out of the way of that right hand. 855-212-4227, 855-212-4227. What could happen in the negotiation between the NFL players and the NFL owners? We'll get some insight into that coming up next. It is the Robin Lundberg Show, and it's here on CBS Sports Radio.
You're listening to the Robin Lundberg Show.
And it's now time to get into everybody's favorite topic, billionaires versus millionaires. That's where we're at when it comes to the NFL, as the league's owners, the league have sent a proposal. The Players Association intends to hold a vote to its full body of players, even though the NFLPA put out a statement saying its board of representatives has declined to vote on a recommendation in hopes of further meetings with NFL management. Joining me now to discuss, Andrew Brandt, columnist for the MMQB, host of the Business of Sports podcast. Now, Andrew, I'm not sure how much fans actually get into this stuff until there's a real threat of games being missed. But when you see this proposal's put out there and a couple things come out from it, like an expanded playoff field, and we know about the 17 games, but those are the only things that are sort of in the public conscious. And then you see J.J. Watt tweet something like, hard no. I don't think people realize all the other stuff that goes into a negotiation like this. So what could it be that's in here that the players are not feeling?
Yeah, morning, Robin. This is a lot to unpack because there's, you know, you can count up to 25 issues in a multi-issue negotiation. For people to understand, every player in the NFL has an individual agent, and then every player in the NFL collectively has a collective agent. And that collective agent is the NFLPA, the union, which negotiates with the collective management group, the NFL, to get an agreement that covers all players, not just one by one. And we're in the last year of a 10-year agreement from 2011 that was only achieved after lawsuits and lockouts and everything else. But here's what's important for people to know. This is not Armageddon. We are not where we would be a year from now. The CBA has another year. So the owners are very intent on getting it done now because they want to go to the broadcast networks with labor certainty. You're not going to have a lockout. You're not going to have a strike. It's going to be a 10-year deal. Great. But looking at it from the player's point of view, is it a good deal? I think there's some deficiencies, which I've tweeted and written and talked about on radio and TV. And you start with the 17th game. And listen, everyone listening has heard players and leadership from the player's side say for 1, 2, 6, 8, 10 years, we will never play more than 16 games. And it's hypocritical of the NFL to suggest that we should when they say health and safety is their priority. But yet, here we are with an agreement on the verge having 17 games. So the ultimate question for J.J. Watt and everyone else is, have they given us enough for this 17th game? And my sense is no, for a couple reasons. Number one, it's a 10-year term. That's way too long. The economics of the NFL are going to change in 2 years with the new media deals. They're going to change with gambling. They're going to change with data. We don't know exactly how, but I think there needs to be reassessment economically in 3, 4, 5 years. So even if they have a 10-year deal, give each side an opt-out after 3, 4, 5 years. I think that's fair. And then the big thing, which we can talk about a couple minutes here, is the split. In 2010, it was roughly 50-50 in revenues between owners and players. As we know, the 2011 agreement swung for the owners and made it essentially 53-47 their way. To get the 17th game, the owners are willing to go essentially to 48-5, split the difference of the 3%, get to 1.5, 48.5. Is that enough? I just think I'm back to the 10-year term. Why not go to 49 in 4 years, 49.5 in 6 years, 50 in 8 years? You know, again, that would be, to me, for both sides, fair. So maybe the players are seeing that, and that's why the deal's held up right now.
You know, going back to the 17th game for a second, it feels like that's an inevitable ask from the NFL. Am I reading that right? Like, the NFL is not going to do this deal without the 17th game?
Of course, and I've said for years, there's no way a CBA gets done without it. Because, and again, back to the 2011 deal, what exactly do the players have to offer the NFL that has real value? And you go down the list, and everything seems to be on the owner's side except extra games. So, yes, I think that'll happen. The problem, Robin, is it's creep. Not creep meaning a vile person. Creep meaning it's going to be 18 in the next agreement. You know where this is going. So they want to get 17 now and 18 in 10 years, and then here we go.
Robin Lundberg talking to Andrew Brandt, columnist for the MMQB, host of the Business of Sports podcast here on CBS Sports Radio. Now, so the strategy from the players would then be, if we're assuming they're going to relent on the 17 games, if not, there's going to be a lockout or a strike or some sort of work stoppage, then they try to get everything that they can otherwise in posturing. But when you see these negotiations play out publicly, I wonder how seriously you treat them. Because if I go to an example I think people can understand, Ezekiel Elliott and Jerry Jones, right? Like, that, there was a lot of time spent on that contract negotiation over the summer, a lot of headlines, a lot of, you know, the like, and then all of a sudden it was done very quickly. Is this simply, you know, an example again of where you need a deadline for this stuff to actually happen?
Yeah, I think so. And listen, there was a lot of noise yesterday, like what you just said, and I'm not blaming you. It's like, oh my God, lockout? No, no, we're 13 months. And again, I'm looking at it as a negotiator, which I did for the Packers for 10 years, and I'm looking at it from the player's side. What is their risk in turning this down? Do we really think the NFL is going to shut down business of negotiations for 13 months while they're trying to get TV deals and show the TV networks we have labor certainty? Of course not. So I think there's not a lot of risk turning this down for the players. And that's where I've never said this about players versus owners, but they have some leverage here because the owners want to get this done more than the players.
And that's, usually you think that the the school of thought would be because the owners have such deep pockets, right, they can wait it out longer. But there's clearly something that they want to get accomplished and quickly, and then therefore that's the leverage for the players.
Yeah, and again, if I'm the president of CBS, Fox, ABC, ESPN, I'm not going to invest billions of dollars thinking there might be a lockout next year. So that is the players' leverage here.
Well, we'll see if that leverage actually plays out to their benefit. Andrew, appreciate your time and analysis on this, man. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Robin.
You're listening to The Robin Lundberg Show.
I always like that title, Professor of Pop Culture. It just sounds cool. Sounds good. Makes me sound cooler than I am. You know, I'm not notorious. I wouldn't say that. Let's go to John in South Carolina. John, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio. What's going on, John?
Hey, Robin. Love your morning show. Wish I could listen to it more, but two things. For the NFL negotiation of those three preseason games, what about making two of them a scrimmage in some of these college stadiums? That would give fans a chance to that don't get to see their teams often and give them a chance to see a game. And the second thing is, I got a good idea for a T-shirt for the Astros.
What's that?
It says, Houston Astros, bang the drum slowly like you're dying, dot, dot, dot. And on the back, it says, for a fastball.
Yeah, I mean, there's going to be a lot of...
I'll hang up and listen.
There's going to be a lot of fun poked at them for the way that they executed their scheme. We've already seen the trash can bit be done a little bit, but I'm sure that will continue as the year plays out. As far as like scrimmages for preseason games, sure. I mean, I think they'll give on the preseason. I do. And it seems like the players are already resigned to giving on the 17th game. So to me, the rest of it's just details. There was a point in time I was worried about the CBA getting done with the NFL and the players. So I'm not worried about it. I think it's going to get done. And I think everything in between is just going to be posturing. How about Mitch in New Jersey? Mitch, you're up next here on CBS Sports Radio.
Good morning, Robin. How you doing?
Good, Mitch. How are you?
Okay, yeah, pretty good, too. I got to think about that, too. Clippers, you got to like their moves. They can just stay healthy. I think they go all the way. I love their moves with Reggie Jackson and Morris. Now, with the Lakers releasing DeMarcus Cousins, any chance that the Clippers could fit him in? Does he get to play this year?
I don't think...
It's just looking good for the Clippers.
Yeah, I don't think he really provides any value for anybody right now. We don't even know if he's going to be able to get back on the floor. Integrating him in the middle of a season would be too difficult. I'm imagining the way this deal went down, it probably there's probably a agreement with the Lakers in place a little bit that he stays and works out with them, and then if he can prove himself, could be on the roster next season. We'll see. But they waived him to make room for Markieff Morris, who will be coming in and playing some backup power forward for them, shifting Kuzma's role a little bit. When it comes to title contenders in the NBA, I think there's 4 to 5 titles contenders in the NBA this year, to be honest. The Clippers are certainly one of them. They have maybe the deepest and the most versatile roster amongst the contenders. Obviously, they have Kawhi Leonard, who's proven himself in the clutch money situations. They live a nice existence, though. They never get criticized. They only get praised and get told they're going to be somewhere at the end. You know, if the Clippers lose a game by 30 points, it doesn't matter. I think they have a couple of concerns. One, that dealing with size, dealing with an Anthony Davis. Two, Paul George's injuries. I mean, there have been a lot of injuries to Paul George. I think that has to be some form of concern. The other contenders are, of course, the Lakers. The Lakers' concerns are a reliable third scorer. They don't really have a reliable third scorer or secondary creator beyond LeBron. That's their biggest issue, I think. The Rockets, I list as a contender. I like what the Rockets have done. I think it's going to work out for them. The biggest concern there, of course, would be any size. But I think more importantly, just do you believe in Harden and Westbrook when it really matters against the other guys when it really matters? And then if I'm expanding it, I don't do any more West teams. Obviously, you have to have Milwaukee there. They have the best point differential, I think, of all time. Giannis has the best player efficiency rating of all time right now. Any of the Bucks' flaws, which is can, you know, their best player create for himself in crunch time, that's still a question. I don't know if they'll run into that as a problem until the finals, but we'll see. You have to put Milwaukee on that list. And if I'm going one more deep, I think it would be Boston I would actually choose because Tatum has had a bit of an emergence. They have depth on the wing. They have depth as far as quality players, and they've done very well against the top teams in the league this year, but they'd be my wild card. The other four are who I think the true championship contenders are with the wild card of Boston. 855-212-4227. Time to get to every topic I have not as of yet in another one. Anthony, what's up first, man?
All right. Speaking of the NBA, Kyrie Irving to have a season-ending shoulder surgery. So given what you've seen from the Nets this year and Kyrie in particular, do you still view the Nets as title contenders when you insert Kevin Durant into the team next season?
Yes, because I think if you put Kevin Durant on that team without Kyrie Irving, they are essentially title contenders. So that would be the difference, I think, the tipping point there. Do you have to have concerns about Kyrie's durability? Of course you do, right? Like, how could you not have concerns about Kyrie's durability at this point? With that said, I mean, Kyrie has played more games than he's missed. It's not like, you know, none of these injuries from this year were aggravations of previous injury. That would be what would really scare me. You know, remember he had the knee procedure before? If this was his knee again and you're just like, oh, no. You know, like when the Knicks brought in Amari Stoudemire? And you knew he had bad knees, and that was the concern there at where he was in his career. That's not the case with Kyrie Irving. He's just had general injuries across the board. You can't go into a season and say Kyrie Irving's going to play 82 games, right? Like, you can't do that. But if you're looking at his game log, before this year, he played 67 last year, 60 the year before, 72, 53, 75, 71, 59, 51. He's mostly played more than, you know, he's just an injury risk. So I think you have to be concerned about that. But overall, I think the right move is for him to get his shoulder healthy now and get ready for next year. The silver lining could be that he won't have to face the scrutiny as the leader of the team anymore. We know he's not really suited for that role. That's done. And he won't take a toll on his legs. It'll be a year where he's basically getting the year off on his legs. So when Durant does come back, they're full strength. But the real difference here is KD. You know, when you're removing all the other variables, you have to put out the precursor that the Achilles injury hasn't been the injury that people have most reliably returned from. But Kevin Durant looks good, and if Kevin Durant comes back to being Kevin Durant, you have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, your championship contenders. But even if you did, let's just say there's a universe where you didn't have Kyrie Irving, you'd still have Kevin Durant with Caris LeVert and Spencer Dinwiddie and the rest of that roster, and I think you'd be looking at them as contenders in the East at least.
Sticking with the NBA, John Beilein out as Cavaliers head coach this week, and he's taking on a different role to assist the organization. Where do you think it all went wrong for Beilein and the Cavaliers?
The Cavaliers organization just seems faulty, right? That was the problem before LeBron. It was the problem after LeBron. I mean, doesn't it make LeBron look even better what he was able to do with that organization? They were a miserable dumpster fire before he got there. Then they were a contender. Then he left and they were a miserable dumpster fire. Then he came back and they went to four straight finals and won a championship. Then he left and they're a miserable dumpster fire again. So I think the first problem I look at is the organization. Second, when it comes to Beilein specifically, two things. The comment he made about them playing like thugs, even if he meant to say slugs, it's bad slip. You know, like, I don't know what's in his heart. I don't know if he meant to say it. I'll give him the benefit of the doubt that he meant to say slugs. It's still a bad slip because of the word thug and the connotation it can have with the black community. And then lastly, it seemed like he tried to bring a lot of that college-y stuff to the pros, where he was making them practice extra hard, watch extra film, you know, this demanding sort of style. Dude in Chicago is doing the same thing. And sometimes that doesn't work quite as well with pros. Now, the pros themselves have to take a degree of responsibility. The Cavs have been a mess, and those guys, you know, haven't acquitted themselves in a way where they should be making any sort of demands of their coach. But I think those are probably the issues that went wrong for Beilein specifically in Cleveland.
Sticking in Cleveland, Odell Beckham reportedly views the Jets as an ideal landing spot if he is traded by the Browns. Do you believe Odell Beckham will return to Pro Bowl form in 2020?
That's an interesting question, where Odell Beckham is right now, because he was and did burst onto the scene as like the next guy, right? Like the next, like, oh man, this guy could be the all-time greatest wide receiver in that mix. And he's had a rough couple of seasons after almost like a rough three seasons. I mean, in the last three seasons, now injuries obviously contributed, playing to the Browns contributed, but he's got 13 touchdowns in the last three seasons combined. He had 12 in his first year, 13th in his second year, and 13 in his second year and 10 in his third year. So he's fallen off a cliff production-wise when it comes to touchdowns. I don't know, you know, part of it's injury, part of it's situation, but I think this is a make-or-break year for Odell Beckham, whether he is in Cleveland or somewhere else. Either he gets back to the status that we've sort of anointed him to, or he's done on that level and is just a guy, a good guy, but not a superstar, move-the-needle kind of player.
Drew Brees announced that he will return for the 2020 season. Robin, at this point in his career, do you believe Brees is still good enough to lead the Saints to a championship?
Probably not. I can't say that definitively, though. I mean, the Saints were in the mix just this year, right? I mean, they were one of the better teams in the league. But I do have concerns about Brees' ability right now in against the best teams, getting those throws off, being able to move. You know, that was a very shocking loss in a sense, the way they lost to Minnesota this year. I don't think anybody expected that. I think everybody had the Saints winning that game. But they lose that way. He hasn't exactly impressed me against the top flight competition. He's another year older going into this year. So, I mean, it's an easier bet to say he won't. Is it impossible? No. Would I count him out completely? No. He's had too great a career for me to totally discount the guy. But I would bet against Drew Brees leading the Saints to another Super Bowl or close to one.
Emmett Smith says that Dak Prescott should give the Cowboys a sizable discount in contract negotiations. Of course, Smith had a notable holdout in 1993. What do you make of Smith's comments?
Well, you could say hypocrite, right? I mean, Emmett Smith having that holdout, like you mentioned, did he take a pay cut? I'd have to go back and look at the details of his deal. Obviously, he was fighting for more money. Now, maybe Emmitt Smith's point of view would be to respond to that. I wasn't a quarterback, right? Like, the quarterbacks are getting all that money regardless. Like, what's a pay cut for Dak Prescott? $25, $30 million rather than $30, $35 million, right? Like, that's kind of the pay cut you're looking at. But I don't know if anybody needs to be up in his business either. This is another situation where, just like Zeke last year, I think even more so with Dak, to me it's inevitable he's going to get a deal with the Cowboys. And all this like public speculation and public negotiation is sort of pointless. Of course, we'll do it. We got to have stuff to talk about. But I really don't see how this doesn't get done. You know, how many quarterbacks in the league are better than Dak Prescott? A handful, but that's it. And it's hard to get a guy like that. So the Cowboys would be foolish to not come to an agreement. Dak would be foolish to hold on for some small victory that doesn't come with the overall big victory of just getting a contract done. So I think we're going to see a Dak Prescott Cowboys resolution before next season, well before next season, in fact.
All right, and finally, after much speculation, we are finally getting that Friends reunion that has been talked about for a while. So this will be an unscripted special on Warner Media's new streaming platform, HBO Max. So is there another TV show that you would like to see a reunion of?
Oh, wait, they're doing a new Friends? They're not just getting Friends back? They're not getting the old Friends? This is a whole new Friends?
No, they're all coming back. The original six are all
back. Yeah, but it's a new show. It's not the old show that they just got access to. I didn't even realize. Maybe I missed that. I remember David Schwimmer had talked about, like, you know, the lack of minorities or something on that show. I guess that was in reference to this. As far as Friends, a reunion. Well, we had the Seinfeld one in Curb Your Enthusiasm, right? We already had that one. So I'm trying, what would be the best reunion of an old show that's... I'm trying to think of the one that still has the most legs and would be the funniest or the most interesting to see play out in real time.
Or maybe a show that didn't get a proper send-off, that didn't get a finale.
What's your vote?
I've always said marry with children, because marry with children, they didn't realize going into the final season that it was their final season, so they never had the opportunity to actually carve out an arc for the final season and have a final episode. So that's why I would say marry with children.
How about Alf? A reboot of Alf? I think you could reboot Alf nowadays. Does anybody know who Alf is still? I don't know. I've thought about Alf in a long time. Yeah, Seinfeld would have been an answer for me. Some of my, you know, favorite shows are still on the air, though, like Curb Your Enthusiasm, South Park, amongst them. The X-Files? X-Files
thing.
Yeah, it did come back for a minute, right?
It did.
You always stump me with these last questions. They're always good. I mean, they're interesting questions, but I don't have the immediate answer right off the top of my head. Right there. I'll have to pond. I mean, because some of them, so many of them, they did that Roseanne reboot. That worked out well. I did tell you, I called that, didn't I?
When you did.
I was like, oh, that's getting off the air soon, the way this lady's tweeting. hopefully for whatever reunion they do, or the Friends reunion, it goes better than Roseanne. I know people like to hate on Friends. I think Friends is very pleasant. I wouldn't say like Friends is great or amazing. It's just pleasant. I have no issues with the show Friends. This has been the Robin Lundberg Show here on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.